Welcome, friends, to the Girl Mom Podcast. This is Carrie Kempakis, your host. Today's episode is about cultivating inner strength as moms and getting well in mind, body, and spirit. My friend Kim Anderson is a Nashville counselor who is passionate about helping women live the life they were created to live. Kim is a licensed therapist, a certified life coach, a speaker, a writer, and a mom to two teenagers, one of whom attends Auburn University with my daughter, which is where Kim and I met last football season and ended up having a deep conversation during a tailgate one day that led to a very special new friendship. Kim has so much wisdom to share, and she offers it with tremendous grace. And I know that you will feel enlightened and also uplifted by the hopeful message that inspires her life work. Thanks for joining me and Kim as we have this conversation about tending to our needs as mothers so that we can live up to our God-given potential. I appreciate you tuning in, and I hope you enjoy the show. Welcome, Kim, and thank you so much for coming on the Girl Mom Podcast. I am really excited about this conversation because it is one that I need myself. And as you know, I love your messages and I love your heart. So let's start with you sharing your why on why you're on this journey to help women get unstuck and also push past the fears, anxieties, and reactive tendencies that tend to hold us back in motherhood and in life.
Well, I am so glad to be here. I really think so highly of all the work that you do and the way that you empower moms and show up for them and give them tools and strategies to really lean into the girls in their lives. And so it's just wonderful to be here.
Well, that feeling is mutual. Like I said, I feel like every time we talk, it ends up being at least an hour long conversation. So we're going to try to limit ourselves here, which will be hard, but I know we could talk for days on all the things that you do to help women, like I said, get unstuck in motherhood and just those areas that hold us back. But, you know, why did you get into this work, or what is it that you were seeing in the women that were coming to you that you realize is more of a common problem than maybe we thought? And that you realize that some of the things that we live with as mothers and women that we don't have to live with, we just accept as being part of our identity or our personality, maybe some negative habits we have or negative tendencies. And we just live with them instead of trying to work through them and get to a healthier place.
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely. I mean, that is what happens. And so I was seeing so many women show up in my office, most of them moms in this season of life where we're trying to figure it all out. And what I noticed is everybody is struggling with the same thing, but yet we feel so alone. We've never been more connected in the world, but yet mm-hmm. we've never been more lonely and more isolated. And so many moms just feel like they are carrying it all by themselves. And so that's why I wrote my book, Unstuck, was to tackle those lies and those myths that keep us from living the life that God calls us to live, the life that we're created to live. Because we buy into this idea that we're not enough and that we are we're not able to do the things that we want to do, or we're not able to be the parents that we want to be. And so that's really why I moved into this space. Initially, actually, I was a teacher and I love working with kids, but I was feeling frustrated because while my job was to teach the curriculum, I was really, really wanting to lean into the social and emotional challenges that the kids were facing and really come alongside the moms and help them as well. And so that's when I went back to get my coaching certification first and then my counseling licensure as well after that, so that I could do this work and really empower moms.
Yes. Oh, I love it. And I think it's so needed. And I think that people are luckily seeing the need for it, that there's not that stigma on getting counseling or therapy. And I hope that that's where our world continues to go, that it's more of a preventative thing rather than a reactive thing. And I want to talk about too, I don't think you're a Christian counselor, but I know that your work is rooted in Christian principles. And I think that's important when we're doing this, because it seems to me, and it's one thing that some early readers have said stood out about my book that's coming out, More Than a Mom, that I talk about, you hear about self-care in the world, and there's really extremes when it comes to self-care. And a lot of people roll their eyes because there is that self-care that's very selfish and self-centered, and it's all about me, and it's all about living your best life. And glorifying yourself, really. And then there's that other extreme where we can be martyrs and we just neglect ourselves to take care of everybody else and think that our needs don't matter. And we've got to find that happy medium. And I really just believe in anything, finding health in any area of life really begins with God and just the Christian principles. So let's talk a little bit about that, like how, I guess, how the Christian principles just are just a relationship with Christ just really plays into our ability to get well and why we want to be our healthiest self. You know, why do we want to be our healthiest self to live out our calling, our mission for God?
That's a great question. And so I do operate from a Christian perspective, and really it's difficult for me when we try to bring faith out of the healing process, mm-hmm. because he is the ultimate healer. And what I find so often in the world today is we are putting our value in everything. We're putting our value in our Instagram feed. We're putting our value in our kids' achievements. We're putting our value in the house that we live in or the car that we drive. And unless we're really putting our value in God and able to look to him for our worth, we're going to fall short every time. And it puts us in that place of comparison, right? We have no choice but to compare and to get stuck in that comparison trap that's so easy to do, especially in today's world, when we don't have somebody to look to for our value, right? Who determines our worth? Who says that we are or aren't enough? And so if we're constantly hustling, trying to look to others to validate us, we're always going to fall short.
Yes. And I love that what you said about comparison. I never thought about that, that when we are looking to our value from those worldly things, we're going to compare ourselves to the woman next to us or the person next to us. And, you know, one thing I've learned about comparison is it doesn't serve any benefit because you're either going to feel better about yourself or worse about yourself compared to someone. Like no benefit comes from that. And it really hurts our relationships and those deep friendships we want to have.
Absolutely. I mean, we spend so much of our time going through highlight reels of everybody else's perfect lives, right? So here you are, you know, throwing in a Costco lasagna, but then you see how your best friend just made her gourmet meal from scratch from her fresh garden.
You know, right.
Or the amazing birthday party that she just threw for her one-year-old that's not going to remember it. You know, we see everybody else's perfect lives, but we don't realize the battles that they're facing and what they're dealing with behind the scenes. And so when we're looking vertically, then it keeps us from looking horizontally and comparing to the left and to the right about what their kids are doing, what their kids are doing, or what we're doing as parents, right? Because we all long for perfect families, but we're not perfect and neither are. And so if God's grace is sufficient for us, it needs to be sufficient for our families too.
Yes. And that's a great point about looking vertically. And I have found too that when I am looking vertically and thinking more about my relationship with him and just a deeper, I guess, intimacy with God, that he often gives me these insights about other people that I would not have otherwise. And somehow it might be something that just opens my eyes. It gives me a little bit of a heart of what they're going through. And so tell me what happens when we do find our value in the wrong place, which we all do at some point.
Yeah. Well, it's a great question. When we do, we hustle for our worth. And the problem is if we're not careful, we make our kids hustle for their worth too. So they learn that they'll make us proud if they make the team. And they learn that they'll make us proud if they get straight A's or if they get into a certain school. And so when, as parents, we can put our trust in God, again, looking vertically, and know that we're enough because we're his, then we remove that pressure cooker of performance that we put on our kids that causes them anxiety.
Yes. Oh, that's such a great point. And it actually reminds me of a text that I got just this morning from a friend. Her daughter's trying out for cheerleader and she's got four daughters like I do. And she is just a very deeply faithful woman. And she was telling me that she's had a good week, but she's had an injury earlier in the week and then something else happened. So she was like, you know, we'll just see what happens. It's in God's hands. And that's what I love about this woman. I met her last year. And, but I was like, she just has a perspective that kind of comes with seasoned parenting. I think when you've been parenting long enough, sometimes where you can really come to a point where you're like, I'm really okay with any outcome because you've seen God's work no matter what happens through events in the past. But I think that sometimes, especially as new moms or young moms, it seems like, you know, if this one outcome doesn't work out, then life is over and our kids feel that pressure. And then if they don't make the team, then they feel like they've let us down on top of the disappointment they're feeling themselves.
100%. So we're looking at the long game, right? We want to imagine the end. What we really want for our kids is to be great adults who mm-hmm. love the Lord and who are leading their families well. And that's it. And so when they look back, these are going to be little bumps that they learn to overcome. They're going to be resilience building, grit building opportunities for them. But we need a vision as moms to say, what do we want our family to look like in 10 years, in 15 years, in 20 years, and start taking those steps now. And we're going to mess up, right? We're going to do it wrong. And you actually say in your Love Her Well book, all of us are only one step away from falling off a cliff, right? Our yes. kids are only one mistake away from making us look like the worst parents in the world. And that's going to happen. And so when we, again, going back to looking vertically, when we are looking to the Lord to define our value, it takes the pressure off of us. It takes the pressure off of our kids, and we can live authentic lives.
Yes. Oh, amen. I agree 100%. Okay. And you currently have a series now on burnout for moms, which is so timely. And in this series, you focus on five things that can help us avoid burnout. And they are, let's see, one, cutting out the noise, which means getting into calm, unplugging, and staying in your window of tolerance, which we can talk about. Two, prioritizing your health. Three, saying no and setting boundaries, which can be very hard for us as women. Four, letting go and ditching the invisible board of moms that you think is judging you, which I really want you to expound on. I think that's so true, and I've never thought about that. And then five, connection and finding real life community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I just put this together not too long ago for the same reason. You know, when I wrote Unstuck, I was seeing these overarching lies that were keeping women stuck. But in the last 2 years, with all that we've been walking through, I mean, burnout is real. Everybody is fatigued, no matter how you slice it as a mom. There's no way that you're not fatigued right now. And so these are five strategies that I use as go-tos with clients that are, they're practical and they're tangible. And so the first one is cutting out the noise. We have to be still. Like, we have to find calm. In fact, I've got a little wood, portrait above my fireplace that says, you know, be still and know Psalm 46:10. Like, we have to constantly be reminded to get into the quiet, because the mental load that we carry as moms is fierce. And if you hacked into our brains, it would look like my computer desktop with 20 windows open all the time. And I don't even want to tell you how many text messages are unread and emails unread. Like, we have information coming at us 24/7, and it's too much for our brains to deal with. And we can't be the moms that we want to be if we are constantly rushing and running around. And so, so the window of tolerance is one of my favorite tools. You can Google it online, window of tolerance, and get a visual for the image. But if you imagine a window, and when you're in that space, you're able to live out the fruits of the Spirit. You're able to experience peace and calm and joy and kindness and patience. And you're able to give feedback and receive feedback without flipping your lid and getting defensive right away, right? And so the window of tolerance is that place where we're grounded. And then something happens in our nervous system, and all of a sudden we flip our lid and we go up above the window to this space called hyperarousal. And hyperarousal is where anxiety lives. And so that's when we're in panic and fear and worry and restlessness. And if we were to go down out of the window and go under the window, that's hypoarousal. And that's where depression lives. And that's where we just kind of get, if you have teenage boys, you know what this looks like. It's kind of this like collapse and submit, like blah state, right? How was your day? Good. What are you doing? Nothing.
Can I get five words out of you?
Right, exactly. Will you give me some words, right? Whereas if you're dealing with maybe a middle school or teenage daughter, you might have a lot of words. They might be more up in hyperarousal. So my point in that is, it's our job as parents to regulate our nervous system so that we're in our window of tolerance when we're parenting. And it's our job to help cut the noise out for our kids. And so even just having an awareness of the window of tolerance is so powerful, because when we're feeling anxious, that's just normal. When I wake up in the morning, until I've had some coffee, I'm in hypoarousal. I need that coffee to get me up to my window, right? Mm-hmm. But what happens is we're living as a society in hyperarousal, where we're rushing, we're cramming things in. We have too many activities. We don't have family dinners anymore. Like, everything's in hyper arousal, and it increases the anxiety in our kids, and it is causing them extreme distress. And so it's not only the pace that we live our lives, but it's trying to resolve conflict. So there's like a 6% chance that we can actually solve conflict when we're in hyper arousal.
Oh, wow. And
isn't that fascinating?
Yes, that's fascinating. I believe it. It's sad, but I believe it.
It's based on Gottman research. And it's what's interesting is, as couples, as parents, we feel like we have to solve things now, and we go right into it in our hyper-aroused state. No, we're going to deal with this now.
Yes.
And it doesn't work. It just creates more anxiety. And so cutting out the noise looks like, in those moments, it looks like doing whatever we need to do to, and we won't go into that now. I've got that in the handout. But so what matters most is getting back into that space of regulation for ourselves, but also for our family.
Yes, that's so true. And it's funny, I've become more aware of that for myself. And even this morning, sometimes when I'm doing breakfast and getting lunches made, I feel myself feeling that anxiety. And I just feel like my heart is racing over little stupid stuff. But I've learned to like put on music. Like, I was like, okay, I just need to like calm myself. And so, you know, I guess some little things that you can do when you are in that state of hyperarousal is, you know, one, we know that breathing is a huge tool. That, what is it? Breathe in through your nose.
It is.
And through your nose, and then out through your mouth.
But what's even more important about that is that we're exhaling longer than we're inhaling. If we're hyperaroused, we want to inhale quickly and then exhale longer. So I like to recommend a triangle. If you picture a three-sided triangle, and you want to breathe in for 4 seconds, then on the other side of the triangle, hold it for 4 seconds, and then exhale on the bottom, on the long bottom, for 8 seconds. Because what happens is, when we're exhaling, we're actually putting the brakes on all of the stress chemicals, and we're getting ourselves back into our window, and just getting back into that place of regulation.
I love that. And, you know, I have a friend who's a doctor, and she talks about how God gives us these tools, these built-in tools in our body to help us regulate like that. And that's something we don't think about, is how we are equipped by something so simple.
We have all the tools we need. Breathing is one of the best things that we can do. It's one of the best things you can teach your kids. It's free. Nobody has to know you're doing it. You can do it anytime you need to, right? They can do it sitting in the classroom. If they feel anxious, they feel like their tummies are hurting, you know, just get them breathing, but making sure that they're exhaling longer. Now, if you're in hypoarousal, you actually want to inhale longer, because you want to get back up to your window. And so you're increasing your sympathetic nervous system instead of relaxing with your parasympathetic nervous system. And so, yeah, so we've got the tools that we need. And if you think about it too, not only that, breathing, walking, listening to good music, relaxing music, like you said, music, you know, gets you back to that space. I crank worship music up in the house, and it just always gets me back to a grounded place. But we have to also be aware, and we'll talk about this in boundaries, but we also have to be aware about the noise that we're choosing to put in our lives, right?
Yes. Yes.
Like, again, the incessant amount of information coming at us, we have to choose to not let it in. And so I'll save that for our boundary section, but we need to really be doing less and really engaging and interacting with our kids more, so that we can help them stay regulated as well.
That's so true. And not to stay on this point, but you brought to mind another point that this has always stayed with me. I have a friend that he does kind of investment banking. Their company, they invest in new businesses, and he meets all kinds of CEOs and professionals and entrepreneurs, just some really interesting people. But he likes to do these polls of the people that he knows. And he's like, you know, one time I did this poll of probably some of the most successful men that I knew. When I had conversations with them, I asked them, you know, what's your secret to success? And the one common denominator that all of them said was that they meditate during the day. And he said they might only do it for 5 minutes a day, but I mean, they might just find a little pocket of time. It's not for, you know, 30 minutes, but they would just kind of get their brain in that relaxed state. And he said that, you know, when we meditate, we get our brain into the prefrontal cortex, which is our rational, our thinking brain. And most of us live in our amygdala, which is the fight or flight reactive, you know, the anxiety producing that part of our brain. And after he said that, I thought that's so true. As a mom, I live in the amygdala. So many of us do. We're just on that fight or flight mode all day long. And it does prevent us from thinking clearly sometimes and having that clarity that we want. And so it really stuck with me to try to, you know, when I am feeling anxious, to try to, you know, even if it's just pray for a minute, just to kind of get my mind in a relaxed state and just to try to get to that big picture thinking where I can think rationally and logically and have the clarity that I want.
You nailed it. The window of tolerance is when we're in our prefrontal cortex, and we can't hear the voice of God when we're rushing, right? We can't, there's no room for it. And it is His truth that keeps us grounded in that space. And so the meditation, that space to just be still is crucial when we are feeling burned out, when we're feeling overwhelmed, even if it's sitting in the carpool line and just sitting there and doing whatever you need to do instead of scrolling, instead of checking out what everyone else is doing in their perfect lives, right? Get grounded in yours, because your life is perfect just the way that it is. Even if it's messy, right? Mm-hmm. Still beautiful.
Right. And something that's helped me as a mom, especially when you do feel like you're rushing around and you don't have time to sit there for 60 seconds and have a prayer, is just doing a quick breath prayer and just saying, help me, Jesus. I mean, there were, especially when my kids were little, there were so many times that I'm like, help me, Jesus, just help me, help me. And yeah. God hears those prayers too. You know, we don't have to be on our knees for 20 minutes for Him to hear our prayers. That He, if our heart is with Him and we are truly trying to listen to Him, He is going to help us and give us that grace.
Yes. Yes. And we don't have to have it all figured out. Right. No. That's what causes our anxiety, is this idea of I've got to figure it out and, oh, I've messed it up. And we get to repair, right? We only have to get it right with our kids 30% of the time. We can mess things up 70% of the time and still create a secure attachment with our kids. What matters is the repair, right? What matters is that we go back and we circle around and we go, hey, here's what happened. Let's talk through that. We own our parts as parents, right? We acknowledge the problem. We talk through it. We create intimacy and security with them when we do that. But what throws us a lot of times in that hyper arousal is this idea that everybody else has figured it out and I haven't.
Right. Now, is that 30% and 70%? Is that based on research or something you've read?
Really? Yes.
I mean, why do moms not hear that? We need to hear that every day.
I know. And that's the beautiful thing. And so we can mess up. I want moms to know, what just the other day I had to repair with my teenage son because of, you know, a way that I got it wrong. And, you know, the beautiful thing is I could go back and go, you know what? I heard myself. I heard my tone. It wasn't fair. And I'm sorry, but let's try it differently next time.
Yes. And I think it's so important too, to think about, you know, what we bring to the table, maybe the way we were raised or the way we've always done it in our life. And just to be aware of that, because it took me so long to apologize to my children and to learn that that was necessary and actually instrumental in the relationship. And it was a game changer. But, you know, I grew up in a big family. We had 5 kids. I was the 4th child. You just kind of learn to be scrappy when you're the youngest one like that. Yeah. But we just grew up like we never apologized after a fight. You know, my sisters and I would get in a fight and there wouldn't be an apology. You just wouldn't talk for 2 or 3 days. And then when you started talking again, it was over, but it really wasn't over. And what I realize now looking back, and I'm not blaming anybody, it's just that was the way we did it. I brought those same habits into parenting and it created a huge gulf with my kids as they became teenagers. And at the same time, I was thinking, well, I want to be this perfect role model for them. And that was creating a huge gulf because they get to be teenagers and they know we're not perfect. So if we're pretending to be, that's going to make them resent us even more. And so it really, that, I mean, I look back and that was probably the thing causing the gulf between us the most. And it was giving me a lot of pride. Like I'm not admitting I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. And I see other parents do it so often. I'm just like, oh, I want you to learn these lessons that I learned the hard way, that don't do that, because it truly will change your relationship with your child. And it also is teaching them to ask for forgiveness or to apologize and to do the repair work that is so necessary in every relationship they're going to have in their life But I don't think anybody teaches us that skill.
Right. You can't have intimacy without that authenticity of humility. Like, humility is the essence of authentic relationships. And so if we're going to ask our kids to be authentic and to apologize and show respect to us, we have to show respect back to them. And so a lot of times people do think, oh, if I'm apologizing, I'm the parent. And if I apologize, I lose my power.
Right.
And the truth is, it actually gives you more power because they see that you're modeling grace and you're modeling humility and imperfection. Because guess what? Again, when we try to play this game and act as if we're perfect, they know we're not, like you said, they know. And right. So the more that we can kind of laugh at ourselves in a sense of, you know, my kids make fun of me. I'm kind of neurotic about getting 8 hours of sleep, right? Like, I get super protective of my sleep. And so they do this thing where they kind of make fun of me. Like, they put their hands in their air and wiggle their fingers. And they're like, oh, 'cause mom's got to get her 8 hours. But I can joke with them and be like, you know me and my 8 hours, like, we all have our things. We're all human. None right. of us, you know, by the grace of God, there go I. And so that's beautiful that you were able to shift that and change that so that you could actually have a connection, right? We get to be right, or we get to be in relationship.
Yes.
And when we choose relationship, it's beautiful.
Yes. And also, you know, it's the whole concept of the older our kids get, we parent more with influence rather than power. So yes. You're not losing power. You're gaining influence when you're honest with them and when you're having a relationship with them. It's probably one of the biggest mistakes that I see parents making, is that we can get very prideful and, you know, my child's not respecting me, but then you see the parent not respecting the child, especially a teenager. And so you're like, they're not going to respect you if they don't think you even like them, you know, but it's so hard for us as parents to put ourselves in their shoes and see that perspective, especially when we're angry or frustrated or upset.
Absolutely. Our goal is to be safe for them, right? That's our goal. If we're mm-hmm. safe parents, if we're a place that they can come to when times are hard, that we can land, they can land with us after a hard day. They can call us when they're in college and they're struggling, like, whatever it is, we're only going to be safe if we're real. And if they see us being prideful or putting up defenses or needing to be right, they're going to turn to somebody else for that consultation, for that influence. And we want it to be us. We want to be the ones that influence them.
Exactly. Amen. Once again. Okay. So we're going to go on to the second thing you're working on for burnout with moms, and that is prioritizing your health. And you're talking about not only your physical wellness, but also your mental wellness. And we've talked a little bit earlier about trauma. And, you know, I was telling you that I think that most people have this perception that trauma is some huge tragedy or huge event that you might have gone through in the past. And not everybody has that kind of tragedy in their past, but everybody does have some kind of trauma. And that in recent years, we're hearing about soft trauma, and it might be a hurtful comment somebody made to you in second grade that really altered your identity or your perception of yourself or the way you talk to yourself. But let's talk about just prioritizing your health and getting yourself well mentally and also physically and what that looks like.
Yeah. So if our health is not a priority in our lives, it spills over to our family. Bottom line, if we don't get our 8 hours of sleep,
right, which does make a huge difference.
But if we're not sleeping, if we're eating food that doesn't serve our bodies, you know, not even from a weight perspective, just from a, does it give us the right energy that we need? If we're ignoring, you know, doctor visits that we're putting off because we're too busy carpooling our kids everywhere around town for their activities, that is going to overflow because we're not going to feel like our best selves. And so, you know, I have a podcast as well, Coming Unglued, where I have a co-host, Lori Zabka, who is a wellness and nutritionist. And the information that I have learned from my time working with her is just fascinating to me, how much our bodies and our minds are integrated as one. And so we can't separate them. Like, our mental health and our physical health is completely integrated. And there's a great book. It's called The Body Keeps the Score. It's by Bessel van der Kolk. I recommend it if you've not heard of it. And he just highlights the way that trauma gets stuck in our brain. And so this idea of trauma showing up, as soft trauma is a real thing, right? So when we think about trauma initially, a lot of times we go to, you know, significant loss, abuse, accidents, big losses, right? Veterans serving, all the things that they experience. But really, so much trauma gets stuck in our limbic system, in our emotional brain, in our hippocampus, actually, that we don't even realize. And so I do a procedure with clients sometimes called, I do it often. It depends if the client wants to. It's called EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And what's fascinating about EMDR is when you're working with a client, they show up with anxiety, they show up with depression, they show up with conflict in relationships. But when we float back, we often get to those soft trauma spots to process. That is, Susie in second grade said, "Kim, you can't sit with us anymore at lunch. Nobody likes you and wants to be your friend, and you're not invited to my party." Right? So then I go into the world with that lens that says, nobody wants to be my friend. I'm not worthy. And then in fourth grade, I don't get invited to another party. And I go, see, confirmation bias. Yep. Nope. Nobody likes me. And then I go to high school and I don't make the cheer team. Yep. Nobody likes me. Then I go to college and I rush and I don't get chosen for a sorority. Yep. See, nobody like, and it just permeates and builds on this little lie that got stuck that we usually don't even know is there. And so that's soft trauma. And so when we're walking around carrying everything that we're carrying in the world today, that's going to get triggered. Those sticky spots are going to get triggered. And so prioritizing your health looks like searching for those sticky spots, right? Whether it's our health, whether it's the load that we're carrying emotionally and mentally from unresolved trauma, so to speak, how do we make that a priority? Because guess what? If mom's not well, nobody's well.
Exactly.
That's the bottom line. We're the glue that holds the family together. And if we're carrying all those bags of, you know, I like to use the visual of a bag of bricks. If we're picking up bricks and we're putting them in our bag, if we're picking up bricks and we're putting them in our bag and we're carrying them around with us, it's going to overflow to impatience with our children, lack of compassion for our children, maybe, you know, erupting on them when they don't deserve it, having a low threshold for anything that's outside of our normal, pattern during the day, whatever it is. And we're going to dump it on them, or we're going to take those bricks and throw them right on them if we don't take care of it ourselves.
Oh, that's so good. You know, and you said something one time in a conversation we had that always stuck with me too, that, you know, our brain, what we believe about ourselves, whether it's that lie we've taken from second grade or whatever it is that has shaped our self-perception and the way that we walk into a room, that our brain does not want to be wrong. And that's why I thought our thoughts matter so much, because, you know, if we believe I'm unworthy, nobody likes me, then we're going to look for evidence that proves that right. And we see it. And, you know, and here's the thing is, when we, if you act in unworthy ways, then it's going to affect the way that people treat you. You know, if you walk into a room expecting to be rejected, expecting to be ignored, you're not going to be your best self. You're not going to be friendly. You're not going to be kind and loving to other people. You're not going to, I guess, have those characteristics that draw people to someone, that make them a lovable and enjoyable person to be around. And so let's talk about that, just those lies we believe and what our brain is doing, because the brain doesn't want to be wrong, and why, like I said, the thoughts that we have matter so much.
Yeah. Well, 100%. You just, exactly what you said, right? It's confirmation bias. So it's the tendency that we have to process information by looking for or interpreting things through a lens that we have, right? That's consistent, because we want to feel in control. And so we actually feel control when we beat ourselves up emotionally by telling ourselves these lies. Yeah.
Wow.
And so we hang on to this narrative. And goodness, if you grew up in a home where that narrative, those lies were told over you often and regularly, of course you're going to believe them. I get it. I would too. Right. So even these like little things here and there that happen can be traumatic enough, let alone having a parent that confirms the very thing that you don't really want to believe, but then kind of adopt as a a defense mechanism. And so our brain does want control. And so the stories that we tell ourselves are so powerful. And if we don't filter them through truth, we have no choice but to feel lousy inside.
Yes. And I know, going back to why you do all this from a Christian framework, this is exactly why. And it's why I write from a Christian framework. Even if you're not writing Jesus or God into every sentence or every conversation, it's like you can't help somebody on these fronts without going to those basic truths, those foundational timeless truths. And, you know, for here, we're talking about the lens through which we're seeing ourselves and that we're going out into the world. You know, the only healthy lens out there is to see yourself through God's lens. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, it's hard because, like you said, I cannot imagine if the people who were supposed to love you the most were telling you were worthless or you weren't wanted or you were a mistake or just feeding you all that during those formative years, then somebody's going to have a lot of work to do in the adult years. And it's not fair. And it breaks my heart because I want every child in this world, every person to grow up with loving parents. But as we know that people are broken and we all have hurtful people in our life. And so let's talk a little bit about, like, how do people learn to see themselves through God's lens? So how do we learn to work to get away from these lies we tell ourselves and what the lens that we're seeing ourselves through, and also learn to see ourselves through God's lens, which, you know, I spent a year writing a book on that. That was my second book, Light, Whose Approval Are You Living For? And it was so funny because when I wrote that book, I thought I was doing it for teenage girls. It was when social media was getting big. They were looking online for their validation and worth. And the moms were like, help me. You know, my daughter is so into Instagram. She cares so much about likes. And so I really wanted to latch onto that thought about whose approval are you living for? And if you are living for your audience of one, then everybody else's opinion doesn't matter. You know, he's the one that determines where we spend eternity. He's the one that created us. He's the one that made us for a purpose. And we're not here to win a popularity contest, that we're not going to be liked by everybody or understood by everybody, but that's okay. As long as we're living a life that's pleasing to God, he's going to honor that. And we're going to be able to live out our best life. But getting to that point where we can see ourselves through God's truths and not through the opinions of other people is so hard. And it takes a lot of work. So Talk a little bit about how you help your clients do that.
Yeah, it takes a lot of work. And, you know, we all have to do that work. As women, we all have to lean into that. None of us are free from the voices that pop up, you know, no matter what our story is. And so the bottom line is, we have to choose it. And it has to be a choice. We have to say, I'm not going to agree with these lies anymore. They're not serving me. And, you know, the first step is really calling them out as lies and identifying it. Because again, if we grew up in a petri dish where everybody says, you know, they call a horse a cow, then we're going to go into the world going, that's a cow. we meet people who say, no, it's a horse. You're like, oh no, it's a cow. Right. So we have to be able to get the mud out of our eyes to begin with, to even accept, wait a minute, maybe these lies that have been told over me, or maybe the lies I told myself, right? Maybe I filled the gap in a lie that wasn't actually said over me, but I just concluded it based on my own self-narrative, that perhaps it's not true. And we've got to be able, so again, back to that image of the bag with the bricks, right? Those lies are the bricks we're putting in our bags. I'm not enough. I need to lose weight. I'm a bad mom. I'm not lovable. I'm not worthy, right? Those are all the bricks. And we have to choose to look at that and go, wait a minute, this isn't serving me anymore, right?
Right.
And sometimes we can just do that. We can just pray. We can do work around it. We can read great books. Other times we have to dig deeper into something like EMDR, like I mentioned. I highly recommend that as a protocol wherever you are. Practitioners use it all around the world. And it is a powerful way to figure out where those lies are and go in and bust them out so that your brain can let go and form new neural pathways to see, you know, to have a different lens. It basically takes off the old lens and puts on a new lens, and then having support around you to walk that journey with you, because it's an important one to slay. But we've got to model those healthy habits for our kids. We have to model choosing to break up with those lies and those habits and those patterns that keep us stuck for our kids so that they don't take on the same patterns. And the other thing too, that I think is so important and so fascinating as I go into people's darkest and hardest places with them, we believe our parents, right? We believe the lies that were maybe told over us. But when we really break it down and we can step outside of it and look at their trauma and we can look at what they brought in to their parenting, the bag of bricks that they had is usually five times heavier, right? And so you often hear parents, well, I did the best I could. Well, you should have seen how I grew.
Right.
A lot of parents defend it and it's understandable. It doesn't make it right, but it's understandable. And when we can have compassion for our parents' journey and our parents' story, then it gives us a softer voice for ourselves.
Yes. And I think that's such an important component too, to forgiving your parents for maybe something you thought you felt like they weren't doing for you growing up or something that they did to you growing up, when you can look at that bigger lens. And just, and I think it's with age, you can see your parents were human beings. You know, they were not perfect. We expected them to be perfect growing up, and we could nitpick every little thing they did wrong, like our children can now do to us. But as we become parents, you realize, oh, you know, we all need more grace, and just seeing ourselves and seeing our parents through God's lens too.
Yes,
you were, and you said something that really, it made me think of something that happened this morning. And, you know, I've tried to get more aware of just the labels that we give ourselves or just the thoughts we have about ourselves. Just this morning, I dropped a carton of blueberries on the floor. I was trying to do breakfast and they went everywhere. And I was like, oh, I'm such a klutz. And that is something I've said to myself my entire life, which I can be kind of klutzy, but my daughter was sitting right there. And I've been trying to work on labels with her. Like, don't put labels on yourself. Don't believe these negative things about yourself. And so I immediately corrected myself and I'm like, I need to stop saying that. I'm not a klutz. Like, I don't need to have that line in my head, but I was doing it for myself, but also for her, because I was sitting there thinking, okay, I'm trying to teach her not to do this. And yet I've been doing it for 40 years and not even realizing it.
Yeah.
And so, but I do think it's just being aware and being intentional that when those thoughts creep up or when some lie from the past creeps up, is like, just to decide, I'm not going to believe that anymore. I can choose differently.
Well, we want to filter through evidence and truth, right? So, you know, Proverbs 23:7, as a man thinketh, so is he, right? When we tell ourselves stories or lies, then we have an emotional response to that, which puts us in a state of anxiety or depression, right? It pushes us out of our window of tolerance. And so we've got to capture, is this true? Do I have any evidence, right? I had a client one time tell me a story about how she had, she saw an acquaintance walking by and she was getting ready to greet her, feeling shy, feeling overwhelmed a little bit because it's out of her comfort zone to greet an acquaintance. She got ready to say hi to her. And the way she told it to me was, this woman just walked right by me and ignored me. And I turned to my friend and I said, see, I knew she doesn't like me. We do that so often. We jump to conclusions, we mind read, we catastrophize, right? See, I knew she didn't like me. Well, the truth is, once we dissected a little more, this acquaintance didn't actually even see her. And I won't even go into the reasons, but she didn't even see her. And this client was saying, she doesn't like me, right? Or I'm an idiot, or I always mess things up. Like, that inner talk is so toxic. Mm-hmm. And so with that, we need to make sure that we are capturing our own internal voice, because we say it out loud and our kids hear it. And then that becomes their internal voice, right? If mom, this is what I hear all the time. Well, if mom thinks she's fat, or if mom thinks she needs to lose weight, what does she think about me? What does she think about my body? Right. And so to your point, we got to capture it. It's not easy, but we got to do it, because we are raising a generation of strong women and strong children. And it's our job to model what strong looks like.
Oh, that's so good. You know, and the next thing that you talk about in your burnout series is saying no and setting boundaries, which I think that we learn with experience. Sometimes when we haven't said no enough, or we haven't set enough boundaries, and we find ourselves overwhelmed and frazzled and committed to things we probably shouldn't be committed to, we learn, okay, moving forward, I'm going to do this smarter. But talk a little about just some basic I guess, tips on how people, how women can know what to say no to, when to set boundaries just to protect our health.
Right. Well, it's so easy to do. And as a recovering people pleaser, it's something I struggle with all the time because I really don't like saying no. And as an extrovert, I like doing a lot of things and being a lot of places. But the bottom line is, again, looking at that long game, we have to think about what is our vision for our family? Because every time we're saying yes to something, we're saying no to something else. And if we go back to being in our window of tolerance, cutting out the noise, it is essential that we put hedges and protection around our family so that we are all experiencing calm. And so getting clear on your vision, what do you want, right? Making family dinners a priority, limiting time on devices, making going to church as a family together a priority, limiting the number of activities your kids are in. Here's the thing. Most of our kids are not going to get college scholarships. Most of our kids are not going to be professional athletes, but we sure act like they are when we start doing travel, you know, travel ball when they're five.
Right. And I feel like for the moms behind us, it's gotten even more insane that yes. Just what it takes now to be on the team or the level of skill in second grade is even different now than it was when we were raising kids.
Yes. Activities are destroying the family unit, not activities in general, too many activities, right? Mm-hmm. I'm all for activities, too many activities, too many yeses is really destroying and pulling apart and creating just fraction in the American family. And so we have to be willing to disappoint people. That's the bottom line for boundaries. We have to be willing to disappoint people. We have to be willing to honor ourselves and our needs and our family's needs, even if it means disappointing others, which it took me a lot of work to get to that point to be able to do it, but it's worth it.
Yeah. And I heard it said one time that leadership is learning to disappoint the right people.
Yes.
I thought that was so good.
I love that.
And that goes. So even if you're a mom, you're a leader in your home and you're a leader of your children. And so it's, you know, being willing to disappoint someone else so you can be there for your child, you know, or just really thinking about who's your priority, you know, where do you need to be?
And they can both be great things. You can have lots of great things on your plate, but you can't do all the great things. You can't have it all. You know, society wants, there's this huge push, especially in social media, of like, you can have it all. You know, you can do everything. It's not true. It's a lie. We can't have it all.
Right.
We can't do it all. We are limited and bound by our resources, by our time, by our energy level, and we have to protect it against all costs.
Yes. You know, it's so interesting. I think, you know, my husband's Greek Orthodox. And so his priest here in Birmingham, he worked in Greece for 10 years. And so we've had some fascinating conversations with him, and we're just enamored with Greece and the way that they live and just their lifestyle after doing a family trip there a few years ago. But I was asking him as I was researching this current book I'm about to release, like, you know, what are you seeing with parents and moms and what are you seeing people struggle with? And he said that, you know, I think the biggest thing I've seen between America and maybe Greece and other European countries, and he goes, I actually was talking about this with my spiritual father over in Greece the other day, is that Americans have this preoccupation with superheroes. And he goes, no other culture has a preoccupation like we do. And it creates this expectation for us to be superhumans. And he was reading a book called How to Be a Good Sinner. And he's like, we don't give ourselves the grace of how to be a good sinner. We don't allow ourselves to be human and have our humanity. And I've thought about that repeatedly since that conversation, because it's so true. Like, we are just expecting perfection from ourselves and we're not allowing ourselves to be human, and it's not normal. And I don't think we even realize it's not normal until you visit another culture that doesn't live like that.
And they don't have the anxiety issues that we have, right?
Yes.
They don't have all of the, you know, just all that we're needing to do to cope with the stress. It's not serving us.
Yes, exactly. And then I did a podcast the other night with it's another Greek Orthodox priest, and he spends the summer in Greece at Ionian Village, which is the youth camp for Greek Orthodox children all over the world. But he was like, I'm so sorry. It had taken us a few days to get together, but he's like, I'm so sorry for the delay. But he's like, I don't know how, but I can go to coffee with a friend in Greece and get everything done that day that I need to. And I just can't do it here. It's just, there's too much to do. And so I don't know if our expectations for ourselves are higher or loads are higher, but you know, it's we're seeing the cost of what it's doing to us. And I think people are realizing that it's just not worth it. You know, our wellness is invaluable. And even if you're making more money or accomplishing more, you know, what does it matter in the end? If you're having that big picture perspective of like, what is our purpose here on earth? And, well, you know, we want to be healthy for our life here on earth. And sometimes these things that we do that undermine our health are really preventing us from reaching those long-term goals that we want to.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. This next point you talked about, which I love, is letting go and ditching the invisible board of moms that you think is judging you. Talk mm-hmm. about that.
Yeah. So don't we all have that invisible board of moms in our head? You know, the one that says, oh, these cookies don't look just right that I'm bringing into the class, or, oh, I'm not getting enough volunteer hours in. What will people think? Right. That's the inner critic that shows up that says, oh, no, it's not okay if you buy cookies from the store because, you know, Sarah down the road, she's going to make hers from scratch and you're going to look like the mom who doesn't care. And so we just have to, again, it goes back to that inner critic. We just have to pay attention to the voice that is showing up. We have to refute the lies that aren't true. It is okay if you don't make the cookies from scratch. It is okay if you buy cupcakes. It's okay if you don't sign up for anything at all. Right. You don't have to be everything to everyone. But if we get stuck in that perfectionistic loop of how we look and what we're doing and what people will think, we will never really live in freedom. And yes. We're called to live in freedom, just like the people in Greece.
Yes.
Which kind of makes me want to move there right now.
I know. It kind of ruined our kids after going. They're like, that's all they want to do is go back to Greece. But it's so true. And you know, writing really has helped me with that. It was funny when I first started, especially when I started writing a column for my community, because I live in a nice community. And sometimes there can look like there's a lot of perfection and it can seem that nobody has problems, but like every suburb, everybody has problems and struggles they're going through. But as I started writing, and you know, sometimes I'd write something and as I write, I'm like, oh, well, so-and-so group won't like this, or so-and-so might snub their nose at this. But so often those were the moms emailing me. And they would share a very personal story with me, a very vulnerable story. And it was just God opening my eyes and my heart and just making me realize how I'd been judgmental toward them, thinking that I knew these women, which I didn't. And so it really can undermine our relationships when we think there's this invisible board of moms, or putting assumptions about people, about the assumptions we think people have about us in their heads that 9 times out of 10 are not true. Sometimes they are true, and that's fine. We can't, you know, there are people who, there is a board of moms, I'm sure, that does go around judging people. But I think so many women are just so concerned about their family, and they're just trying to be a good mom and a good role model for their children, that they're not sitting there spending their whole day thinking about what everybody else is doing.
Mm-mm. And a lot of times when we go to that space, it's to make ourselves feel better when we're forming a conclusion about how people are, how people might be, because we don't want to feel rejected. You know, we're telling ourselves that they're rejecting us, but they're not really rejecting us.
So, right.
You know, we can just get in these crazy loops. And at the end of the day, we have no control over what people think. We don't, but yet we hustle as if we do. And it's really not our business what they think. As long as we know we're living according to our values and we are doing the best we can, that's all we can do. And when we assume everybody else is doing their best as well, we don't know the battles they're facing. They're doing the best they can as well. And when we can assume that, again, we go back to freedom. And so, yeah, so letting go to me looks like evaluating, you know, what is our responsibility and what is a concern. And you know, I love to have people write columns where they have responsibility on one side of the column and concerns on the other, and just write everything that's on your shoulders right now. And then the concerns, you got to let those go. The responsibilities, you got to figure out what are you going to do about them. But so often we're carrying around concerns like bricks, and it's not ours to carry.
That's so true. And I think that this point leads so well to the next point, the fifth way that you help moms work through burnout, which is connection and finding real life community. Now, if we go into our relationships, or we go into our community or our Bible studies or small groups or whatever it is we're doing, thinking everybody else has it figured out, they're all perfect, are they judging me, what are they thinking about me, if we're walking on eggshells, we're not going to have that strong and deep community. We're not going to open ourselves up and be vulnerable to build those authentic relationships. So let's talk a little bit about that. Just, you know, how do moms find that connection in real life community? And not only that, but also knowing, I guess, finding the people that are safe to do that with, because, you know, You can go in and be authentic and share a vulnerable story with one group, and it might be received well. It might deepen your connections, and you might go share it with another group that doesn't really open up like that. And all you hear is crickets, and you're like, "Oh gosh, what did I just do?" This is not a setting where they talk like that. They just kind of keep it more on the superficial level.
And then you've got trauma because you've got a vulnerability hangover, like Brené Brown says. And you're, you know, we get in these
exactly.
It's a horrible feeling, and that really is. It's a difficult thing to navigate, but we're created for connection. We're created for community, and that is how God wired us. And you can see the results of isolation on our society that we've, you know, just walked through in the last 2 years, how it's impacted people. And so there's no doubt we need it. The question is, how do you get it? And there's not a magic answer, except that you just keep showing up. But you show up in your neighborhood at events, you show up at church at events, you show up, you volunteer areas that you're passionate about, and you just keep showing up and finding those connections. But don't be afraid. I think that's the hard thing, because we're so afraid of rejection that often we stay in our little cocoon, and then we're surprised that we feel lonely. And so showing up takes work. You got to push your sleeves up. And again, standing in that space where you're able, if you're in your window of tolerance, you're able to be authentic, you're able to be okay with it. I tell, you know, clients when they come in and we start working together, I'm not going to be everybody's Chick-fil-A sauce. So you may or may not like me. I may not be the right fit for you. If not, that's okay, right? God has somebody else for you to work with. And that's going to be beautiful. I can't be all things to all people, and I can't be the right person for all people. And neither can you, right? And neither can everybody listening. We all have to find our tribe, but it does take work. It takes time, and it takes resilience.
Yeah. And you know, one thing that I just want to talk about in this connection point is to not devalue our lonely seasons, to not discount those hard seasons, because I really think that those are the seasons that can help us up our friendship game, and they can teach us what it feels like to be on the other side. It can make us more empathetic, and it can teach us that ability to show up. It can force us to take that initiative. I guess my loneliest season, you know, happened right after I got married, and it was also my best lessons in friendship that I ever learned. But, you know, I grew up in Tuscaloosa. I went straight from high school to college 15 minutes away. I knew people there. I moved to Birmingham after college. Again, knew a lot of people. So I'd never been in a situation where I didn't know some people. And then I got married and I moved to Huntsville, and there were so many great people, and I would get invited to a lot of things, but I did not have any good friends. And, you know, there were some supper clubs that I go to, and everybody was kind, but I come home and cry to my husband. I'm like, I just cannot compete with these friendships where they have like known each other since 2 years old, and they joke about taking baths together as babies. Like, you know, that they just have this history that I don't share. And I'd never really felt like what it felt like on the other side of those conversations. And I found my place, and I found my good friends. It took me a while, but I did find them. And it was so eye-opening to me, and it was so helpful to me, because now if somebody new moves to my community, I'm pretty quick to reach out. I try to include them or introduce them to people, just because you know what it feels like to be a newcomer to an area. And so, but that time when I was in that lonely season, it was probably about 6 months. I mean, I look back and I accepted every invitation that came my way. And there were some days, I mean, I was studying at home. Harry and I were back in school, so I was studying at home a lot of days. But I mean, some days I wouldn't see anyone all day long. And I mean, when the postman would come, and I'm talking to the postal carrier, and I'm like, oh my gosh, he's so nice, Harry. Have you ever met him before? He's my friend. but it's just funny. But it taught me to just look for friendship everywhere. And sometimes it drives my girls nuts, because we'll go to a store, we'll go, go get coffee somewhere, and I'm talking to the cashier. I'm just talking to people. But I love meeting people now. I love making new friends. And you never know where you're going to find your people. And I think that's important for moms to know too, that we definitely need our age and stage friends. We need those friends who are in the same season of life and get what we're going through. But then also, some of the best friendships we'll make will be, it might be somebody a little bit older than us, or somebody younger than us, or somebody we meet through camp, or somebody we meet through an injury our child has. And all of a sudden they need some medical care, and you become friends with the doctor or the therapist or whoever it is. That, you know, there are opportunities to find your people and to find connection anywhere you go, just as you're living out your life.
I love that. And I think also it's so important for women to remember and be just mindful that seasons change, And that, you know, when we hold our friendships tightly enough, but loose enough, and find that balance, then as people come in and out of our lives, it doesn't feel so devastating and overwhelming as well, right? And so just always having that, the space for movement is a really beautiful thing when it comes to friendships. And I feel like when we do that, it's often beautiful, the friends that God brings into your life through those ways that you're describing.
Yes, yes, definitely. Even teaching our kids that, that friendships can be fluid, and to, you know, you might be closer to certain friends in some seasons, you see them a lot, or you have a lot in common, and that's okay, but just leave those doors open to your other friendships. And maybe when you're not as close, but leave that door open to future connection. Okay. We could talk all day, as we both know, but we're kind of getting here toward the end. And I just want to wrap up with a counseling concept that you love that I also think is just fantastic. And really, I think can give us parents a vision of the kind of parent we want to be. And it's called the circle of security. And the goal of this is to be, let's see, bigger, stronger, kinder, and wiser than our children. So talk a little bit about that. And let's also talk about the, you know, not jumping on the emotional roller coaster with our children, what it means to look like a strong parent and to be the one who's given them that security, especially when they're going off the rails.
Absolutely. Well, the circle of security is one of my favorite tools to share. And it's one that, frankly, I wish I had known and understood when my kids were younger, because it really gives us a beautiful framework. And it's a representation of, in my opinion, God's security, right? With these safe hands. So if you have a computer near you, or if you want, that sounds so dated. If you have a computer near you. The millennials are like, I mean, hello.
Got my mini computer right here.
So if you want to look it up online, you can just Google circle of security and it'll pull up an image of what it looks like. But I just picture kind of an oval. And on the left side of the oval are our hands, our safe hands as parents that are there. And they're strong. And if you leave the hands on the left side and you go on the top side of the oval, you're encouraging your child to go out and explore. So imagine that you have a three-year-old and you go to the park and the child wants to go look around. You want to let your child go look. You want to let them explore. You want to delight in them. You want to watch over them. You're engaged with them. You're not sitting on your phone while they're playing on the park. You know, you're not sitting on your phone while they're running around. You're actually giving them eye contact because they're going to be turning back and looking to you to know that your safe hands are still there. And then all of a sudden something happens on the right side of the oval, something a little bit scary. Maybe a big kid is on the slide and comes down and startles them out of nowhere. They need to be able to run back to you. They need to be able to come back to you for comfort, and you're helping them. You're supporting them. You're helping them organize their feelings. You're there with them instead of saying, oh, you're overreacting. It's no big deal. You just don't cry. It's not okay to cry. You're with them going, yeah, that was scary, but it's okay. Hey, do you want me to walk with you? I can walk with you. And you're engaged with them. You're attuned to them. And you are being the bigger, the stronger, and the wiser, and the kinder parent in your approach to them. And so that's just a beautiful map for where we want to be. It doesn't mean we can't have hard times. It doesn't mean we don't have our own stuff. We just don't put our stuff on them. We don't give them our bag of bricks. We turn and we go to a friend, a spouse, a counselor, a coach, anybody that can support us, but we're not bringing that to our kids. And so I just highly recommend it as a great model for anybody that's in that season of parenting, and really any season of parenting. I still, with our college daughter, you know, I'm like, go fly. And if you need anything, come back. I'm here. But I'm not going to be a hover parent, right? I'm not the parent that's calling the teachers at college. You know, I'm not the parent calling the teachers, the university professors saying, oh, you know, my daughter didn't get the grade she wanted. Can she retake the test?
Right. Okay, and the funny thing is we crave that from our parents at every age. I mean, I'm almost 50 and I still call my dad needing that security and that strength from him. I mean, he's still that rock for me. And I don't even like to think about the day that I won't have him, because he's such a source of strength in my life. And that voice of wisdom And I know that it'll probably deepen my relationship with God, because ultimately he's the ultimate stronger, kinder, wiser one. But I agree. I think that's our calling as parents, is to model for our children what God is doing for us. But to be the stronger parent, to be that person, we've got to strengthen ourselves as adults. And I think that really hit home as my kids became teenagers, that if I'm not in a strong place, I can't parent very well, because this is so mentally taxing and emotionally draining sometimes, that I've got to be in a good place. So I think that anything that we can do to strengthen ourselves as parents, and one thing that I do think holds us back in this day and age is that just the culture of child-centered parenting, that sometimes we put so much into our children and we're pouring so much into them that we're not making time for our friendships. We're not making time for our spouse. We're not making time for our interests outside of our family. Those things that help us become the best version of ourselves. And so, you know, really just knowing that we're doing our kids a disservice by making them the center of the universe. And of course, they're going to be a priority, but by making Christ centered homes and making him the center of our universe, it's going to be a much healthier dynamic, both with our children and just with ourselves too.
Yeah, it's too much pressure on our kids to be the center of our world, right? Think about that, the anxiety that comes up when we make them our idol. It's overwhelming to them. They know they can't do it. There's no way that they're going to be perfect enough. And so when we can, you know, worship the real God instead of making our kids that, you know, having them hold that space in our lives, it frees our kids up. It frees us up. We can all be in freedom when we have it the way it's supposed to be.
Exactly. And I think it just goes back to trying to worship the one who created motherhood rather than worshiping motherhood itself.
Yeah. And your book that's coming out, More Than a Mom, speaks to so many of these points in such a beautiful way.
Well, thank you. And it's funny, it's a book that I don't think I would have written 5 or 10 years ago, but it's just what you learn. I think after 2 decades of parenting, you're like, oh, this is something I wish I'd known at the onset, but never too late for any of us, right?
Yeah, if only I had known. That's a lot of my self-talk.
That's true. That might be my next book. Well, Kim, thank you so much for coming on today. You've given so much wisdom, and I can't wait to just listen to this episode for myself, just to hear it again and just to really take in all that you said, because I think that you really have so many tools and just little small pivots that we can do to become stronger moms and stronger people and just more the people that God created us to be. Well, Kim, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I am so thankful that you shared all this wisdom. I cannot wait to listen to this episode again, just to take it all in and just to apply it to my own parenting and just my mental process of how I want to be a stronger and a better mom. I just want you to end by sharing just maybe some ways that people can find you on social media, any services that you're offering through your counseling clinic or your coaching that you do, and just maybe a final word for moms on how to become the stronger moms we hope to be.
Absolutely. Well, people can find everything on my platform is at kimanderson.life. So Anderson with an O, kimanderson.life. Or they can check out my podcast, Coming and Glued, where I share a lot of these strategies with my co-host, Lori Zabka. And if they want to download the 5 truth bombs that I shared for burned out moms, they can find that on my website as well as a free download. So, and a final word, I just think for the burned out moms, like everything that you're doing matters. So if you've got little ones, the diaper you just changed matters, the runny nose you just wiped matters, the homework you're struggling with, that matters. For middle school and high school moms, just, you know, do the best you can to stay off the roller coaster. It is so tempting to want to get on and ride with them, but it is so much better on the ground. And if you go back to that circle of security, just stay on the ground with your arms open, smile on your face, love in your heart, and let them know that you can handle their hard things. And then for moms of older kids, just let them fly. They need to go out in the world and figure it out. Leave the light on, be their safety net, and let them figure out how to solve their problems so that you can be more of a consultant and influencer, as you mentioned, Carrie, rather than a coach that's telling them what to do all the time. So, and just for all the moms, you don't have to do it all. Just remembering society wants us to buy the lie that we need to be everything to everyone, but it's not true. we can't have it all. We can't do it all. And so just rest in the freedom that the God of the universe has got it covered. And you are doing a great job.
That is the perfect ending. Kim, thank you so much again. I love this conversation. Like I said, I'm excited to listen to it again myself and just appreciate you taking the time to be here with us today. I know it's going to bless and benefit the moms who are listening so much.
Thanks so much, Kerry.
Friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. I'm so grateful to have you here. And if you enjoyed the show, please follow the Girl Mom Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen. And leave a ratings or review so others can find these messages too. Also, my new book for moms called More Than a Mom, How Prioritizing Your Wellness Helps You and Your Family Thrive is now available everywhere books are sold. This book is for girl moms and boy moms and full of encouragement no matter what season of parenting you're in. Find the link to this book and my other books in the show notes. Thanks again for your support and have a great day.